Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, hello everyone. Welcome. So there's an interesting thing in the Haggadah. The Haggadah begins, Yochel Merosh Chodesh. I would have thought you can celebrate Pesach from Rosh Chodesh. Tamalomer Bayomahu. That it can only be celebrated Bisman Shesh, Matzah, Mora, Menachem, Lefanecha. That it really wouldn't be right to have a Seder now. You got to wait until the actual night of the 14th when you bring the Korban Pesach. What was it saying? I would have thought you could celebrate Pesach from Rosh Chodesh. So it must be that even before Pesach, there's something unique and special about the whole month of Nisan. And sometimes we're so busy doing mitzvahs and getting ready and being overwhelmed about getting ready for Pesach, we forget that once the month has started, which it has started already, we're already in the month of Geula. We're already on the road to redemption, and hopefully we can take advantage of that. I wanted to do something unusual this time, which is usually I get to the products at the very end. And by that time, everybody's all worn out, and we're all talking about kashering and this and that. So I thought I would talk about what's new this year first, and then we'll start over again with getting the house ready for Pesach. So the new thing this year was there was an alert out about quinoa. Now, quinoa is a beetroot that almost all the poskim say is usable for Pesach. I would say almost all. There's never a total consensus. There's still some people feel it shouldn't be used. But the vast majority of the poskim in the United States felt that you could use quinoa. It's not a grain. It's a root. And therefore, it's not considered kidneyous, even though it looks a little bit like rice, and it would be acceptable. And for the last 3-4 years, it's become relatively common for a lot of people to use quinoa. In between the meat and potatoes and the meat and potatoes and the meat and potatoes, you can have meat and quinoa, or potatoes and quinoa, right? So the thing about quinoa, though, this year, is that there was a facility in South America that they were certifying quinoa that they discovered also packages barley, and they weren't really careful if occasionally a barley seed got mixed in the quinoa. And so when the kosher agency found this out, they said, wait a second, we can't use quinoa if it's going to have little pieces of barley in it. You really should only buy quinoa if it has a Pesach certification. So the only problem is the quinoa is so new and it's made in the rainforest, there is no kosher for Pesach quinoa. But people got so used to it, and it's a superfood. It's like healthy and low calorie. It's got all the good things. So they researched it a little bit more, and they discovered that in Bolivia, they package it straight in the rainforest, not with the other grains. And so the CRC, Chicago Rabbinical Council, came out like 2 weeks before Pesach that, yay, you could use quinoa, but just stick to the Bolivian quinoa. And as a safety precaution, just look through it to make sure that there's nothing that looks like barley or grain that's mixed in. And if you see something that looks unusual, just take it out before Pesach. Just spread it out, the quinoa, ideally the Bolivian quinoa, and just pick out something that looks like it doesn't belong there. And that's the whole quinoa story of the. That was the new thing this year that got everybody excited.
Do you buy the bins or anything? You have to have a picture on it?
No. You can buy the quinoa, and ideally from Bolivia, but make sure to check it beforehand. And I spoke to some of the Sephardim. They buy rice, and the rice, one of the reasons, there are two reasons that we don't use certain products known as kitnios. Kitnios we call are legumes, but it's a wide category of products like corn and beans and rice. So one reason is that some of these products are used to make like bread products, like cornbread or... But another reason is that the way they are made, they're grown together with grains. They're farmed on the same wagons and they're put on the same silos as grains. And today, with as modern as we are, you know, you think we're do a perfect job, people used to laugh and say, well, what do you mean? How's the grain going to get into my corn, into my rice, into my... So what's happened is, Baruch Hashem, there's some people, I guess there must be a reason why, are allergic to grain. And so the lawyers don't want them to sue the company. So on some of the packages they write, packed in a facility that also packs grain or other products. Why do they write that? Because occasionally grain could get in. So the Ashkenazim, they just avoided a lot of these items that were packaged, you know, around grains. And the Sephardim, they would use rice, but they would check it very carefully. And I'm told that they start weeks before, and they go through each little piece of rice, and they just, you know, pull out. And so if you so quinoa this year is like rice for the Sephardim. Just make sure to check it if you want to use it for anything that doesn't belong there.
You check before Pesach.
Ideally before Pesach.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. If you get it from Trader Joe's, does it have to be from Bolivia, or it doesn't matter?
If it's that brand, it doesn't matter. But that brand comes from Bolivia, though.
Okay.
Now, we did mention, somebody just threw in the idea of buying before Pesach. Ideally, if you're buying anything that is not a kosher for Pesach item, it's better to buy it before Pesach. What do we mean? Let's say you're buying pet food, or let's say you're buying medications, or let's say you're buying those things that we think are basically kosher with Pesach, but there's nobody really there to actually know 100%. So if you buy it before Pesach, if there's a little bit of chametz in there, it would be nullified. If you buy it on Pesach, let's say you bought quinoa on Pesach, and then you discovered a piece of barley, so then you're stuck. Then you bone chametz on. So it's always better to, things that you're unsure of, or things that we double check on, or things that are always better to buy before Pesach. This year, there still is a problem with wine from the Shemitah year, from 2008, from Israel. And the problem is that the wine that was grown during the Shemitah year, the sabbatical year, you're not allowed to keep it past a certain point. That's called the Zman Habir. And it says in Hebrew that it was supposed to have not been used. And instead, they figured in Israel, everybody can read Hebrew, so they sold it to the United States. In New York, they knew not to use it, so they shipped it all down to Atlanta. And so we pulled it out of one store, and then they shipped it to the other store, and then we pulled out it. So if you have wine from Israel, the year 2008, you'll see it does not have the regular heksher on it. It won't have the OU or the OK. And it's really complicated. I'm not sure you're allowed to take it back. I'm not sure you're allowed to throw it out. Maybe it has to go to Israel. It's a whole, ask your rabbi if you happen to have bought that by mistake. Reconidi and Yardane and all the good, you know, kosher brands from the sabbatical year, they should not be, even if it was okay in Israel during the sabbatical year, it needed to have been used up. And it wasn't. It somehow found its way over here. So that's something to be careful of.
Check the dates on your wine that you have.
If you didn't check the symbol, did we get used to just seeing the brand and putting?
OUP, I mean.
It doesn't have the OUP.
It doesn't.
It just has Hebrew writing. And the Hebrew writing says don't use after the following date, and it's too late.
Why only buy OUP? Because I can't read Hebrew.
I see. One other wine to be careful of is Manischewitz. They do a regular grape wine, and they also do a kosher Lepesach grape wine. And the identical wine, one has an OUP and one doesn't. And again, sometimes in the supermarket, it could end up one on the shelf and one off the shelf. You just have to be careful with that. And a third warning, and then we'll get to the kashering the home for Pesach. Baruch Hashem, there's a lot of products today that come from Israel for Pesach. They have the factories, since the whole country is Jewish, so almost all the factories do Pesach production. And so there's a much wider range of products coming from Eretz Yisrael than come here. Eretz Yisrael, the majority of Jews in Eretz Yisrael are Sephardim. And Sephardim have different rules for Pesach than Jews from European descent. So some of the products that come from Israel, that they are kosher year-round, and they have a very good heksher. It says OU, or it says Badatz, and it's fully kosher. And the kosher is for everyone. But the Passover kosher, in Hebrew, it says only for Sephardim. And actually, it doesn't say that. It says, "Rak la'ochle kitniot," only for people who eat kitniot. But if you're of European descent, which almost all, if you don't daven across the street, you daven here. That means you're from, you know, your grandparents or whatever were from, you know, Europe. Then you should not use it. So even though the kosher on the Israeli product, it says kosher, it won't have an OUP either. It'll say OU. And then on the pad, it'll say kosher for Passover, and then under the words kosher for Passover, it says only for those people that are follow the Sephardic customs of the. And so some of those, we tried to keep those products separate, but it doesn't, by the time, sometimes the supermarkets put them out before we get there. Or sometimes they're in the regular shelf, So it's just something to be aware of. If you have the Israeli product, now if you just look for OUP, you're always safe. You're fine. But if you look at the Hebrew writing, so you have to be on the alert either for, if you're Sephardi, there's also no problem. But if you're not Sephardic, make sure it has kosher for Passover for, it has the OUP, and then make sure it's not from the Shemitah year. Okay. And we'll come back to products, but those were some things that were new this year that I just...
I have a question about Nuvet chocolate syrup. I have never bought it because it just has a K on it.
That's an acceptable K. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm not sure if it's Parv. It might be dairy.
It's a
Parv?
Well, it doesn't
okay.
say dairy.
Oh, if it doesn't say, then it would
now
be Parv.
I'm thinking the kosher for Pesach, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is Yuvet, and it's got another K on it, and it's kosher for Pesach, so I didn't understand, but it's an approved K.
Correct, that's right. Okay. Okay, let's talk about getting ready for Pesach. And I remind everybody that if you do more than what we say, that's fine. In other words, you can always do more. But sometimes you're rushed for time and you want to know what the minimum is. And then obviously, like I said, we all should try to do it the way our mothers and grandmothers did it if we could. There are differences. In other words, I started to think about it like, my grandmother always made Pesach with everybody, and she didn't have a microwave and she didn't have the kind of equipment that we have in our kitchen, you know, the flat top stove, and she didn't have, we have so many things that it's more complicated. It's just more work to do, or our lives are more complicated. We have more products and more things that, or it seems like it anyway. So, I wanted to talk, so in general, what we try to do is start with the minimum, and then if somebody wants to do more, or always does more, or their family, they do more, great, wonderful, that's fine. But I always try to just do what the basic requirement is. Okay. So, the first thing is that if we do several things in order to make sure we don't own chametz. And we do things, and we do them all, even if they overlap, because we want to be so careful not to have any chametz. So the first two things are the easiest things. And sometimes we spend so much time doing the hardest method that we forget to do the easy. The hardest method is cleaning and getting rid of every drop of chametz that's anywhere in our kitchen that's full of crumbs all year round. That's the hardest one. But the easier two, we sometimes rush through and we forget. So what are the easier two? One is authorizing the rabbi to sell any chametz for you that you may have. Make sure to have you or someone in your family authorize the contract. Even if you don't sell bread stuff and you try to give it away, you should still authorize the rabbi to sell, because you might have think you've given away all your bread stuff, but you might have forgotten something. So, number one, if you did that, even if you forgot to clean something, and even if it's there, you're taken care of. So make sure to authorize somebody to sign the form to authorize the rabbi to sell it for you. Yes?
Are there people in this community who don't hold by selling chametz?
So that's what I'm trying to say. There are people that don't prefer not to. In other words, they'll give away all their bread stuff and all that. But even if you prefer not to, it's a safety net.
So what if I do sell my chametz tonight? So I have it after Pesach.
Mm-hmm.
Are there people that wouldn't be...
Oh, no, they'd be fine. In fact, the same people who don't sell chametz run to the pizza shop right after Pesach. So they... Now, if you ever wonder, how did the pizza shop have all the pizza right after they sell their chametz? But it's not a contradiction. People prefer not to have bread products in their house, even if they don't own them. And so if we're able not to have the cookies and the others, so it's much better not to have them. So if your custom is to try to give them away or not to have them, that's better. But if you have them, that's certainly fine. But make sure to sell or have somebody in your house that authorize the sale. And then the second thing is we make a declaration the morning of Erev Pesach. You know, who has any idea what they're saying the morning of Erev Pesach? And it's Aramaic. It's not even in Hebrew, where we declare any chametz that we may own is null and void. And that's the second safety net. And which you're basically saying that I did my best to clean everything, but you know, maybe I left in my locker in the gym and in my briefcase and I forgot to clean out the vacuum bag. Who knows what I forgot to. So if you do those two things, that's a safety net. You're good, you're fine. You've done everything. And even if you find some chametz on Pesach that you forgot about, you didn't do anything wrong. You've done 100%. So we're going to talk about the third thing that we do, which is checking and cleaning and kashering and all that. But make sure you do the other two also, which is selling and nullifying. The nullifying you can do in English, even though it's always in Aramaic. That's the Kol Hamira. And we actually do it twice. We do it the night when they do the bedika, and we do it again in the morning. You could do it either time. Usually at night, we still have the chametz for the next day's breakfast. So, one comment about selling chametz that always comes up. So once you've sold chametz, you don't own it. But that only is part of the problem. The other problem is, though, it shouldn't be out in the open. Even if you don't own it, it shouldn't be in an area where you walk and you're going to see, you know, boxes of food, or because you wake up in the morning sometimes, especially after the Seder, you're a little groggy, and you go, you know, oh, that cookie looks good, you know. So you should have something in some way. So the ideal or the strictest view would be to put it in a box in the basement or lock it up or that. But the minimum view is, as long as there's something that you won't take it by accident. It could be a piece of tape on a cabinet, just one little piece of tape. Tape the cabinet closed. It can be put in a bag. It could be a piece of foil. Just something that you won't come to use it. Now, you can even do this in your fridge and your freezer. Let's say everybody has, like, you come to Erev Pesach, you have half a jar of mayonnaise, half a jar of ketchup, half a jar of salad, and you hate to throw all that stuff out. I mean, it's a waste or whatever. So in theory, what you could do is put it in the bottom drawer, tape it shut, and you authorize the rabbi to sell it in case there are crumbs in there or anything that's chametz, and that's okay. As long as you won't come to use it by mistake, even though it's in the fridge that you open on Pesach, or even though it's in the freezer, if it's taped up, if it's papered over, if there's something that you won't come to use it by mistake, then that's fine. That's the basic thing about selling. Now, let's go to cleaning. Now, with cleaning, you only have to clean where you plan on going for Pesach. So, people that aren't in their house for Pesach, so they don't necessarily have to clean their house if they left their house 30 days before Pesach, or if there's an area in your house where you don't plan on going, let's say you don't plan on going up to the attic, or you have a guest room, so you don't necessarily have to clean in there, you don't plan on going there on Pesach. Now, if you would like to be able to go there, so obviously you would want to make sure you have no chametz in that room. But if you have a room that you don't, it's just easier. Some people, they have certain cookbooks and other books that might have crumbs in them. So you don't have to check those books if you won't use them on Pesach. So for a week, you won't use your cookbook. You won't use your cookbooks anyway. Whatever it is that would be difficult to check, you can just put it away. And if there's any chametz there, sell it. But as long as you don't plan on using it for Pesach, we're supposed to check our pockets. So if you live in Atlanta, hopefully your winter pockets, you're not going to plan on putting on your winter coat. Hopefully. One year I was in South Bend and it had a snowstorm on Pesach. But if you're in Atlanta, you probably won't use your winter coat. So, and you don't plan on putting your coat on, your winter coat on, so you don't have to check the pockets of your winter clothes that are in your closet, because you don't plan on using it for Pesach. But as long as you remember that you didn't check it, and you know, that's fine. But as long as it's within reason, you don't plan on going there, again, you have in mind that you're going to sell it. Those, there was a famous rabbi that he would learn all the time, even when he was eating, so he was afraid that any of his books might have crumbs in them. So for Pesach, he just took one or two books, checked them very well, and the rest of the books for 8 days he didn't use. That was like a... But so if there are things that are very time-consuming and you don't plan on using them, so just put them away, or just know that you're not going to go there and you're not obligated to check. Now, most of us don't plan on moving our fridge on Pesach, or going behind our fridge, right? I hope not. So if that's true, you don't have to clean behind your fridge or under your fridge, because you can just decide, I'm not planning on going there for Pesach. I'm not planning on moving it, and if I have any chametz there, I could sell it. And so, if there is crumbs back there, as long as it's an area that, under normal circumstances, there's no way I'm planning on going there, you really don't have to move your fridge to get the stuff underneath it. Now, we like to, because it's really not healthy to have the food rotting under the fridge. That, you know, it's good once a year to clean it out, but it's you could hurt your back, you know, moving the fridge or the other. There are things like that, that if you really aren't planning on, like I said, if you don't plan on Pesach on pulling your fridge out to clean back there, there's no reason to do it on before Pesach either, other than it's a nice thing, it's a way to be more thorough, but it's not something that you would really come in contact with on a regular basis. Now, with the kitchen, it's a good thing to make a plan beforehand. Because if you just start cleaning everything, you end up cleaning things that you don't need or you don't use or extra. And my experience, I find that sometimes there are things that nobody's thinking of that are a problem. I remember in the olden days when the phones used to have a cord. So people that would be on the phone, so the cord would be on the counter, and a lot of times it would get chametz on it, and nobody would ever think, how do you kasher your phone cord for Pesach, right? Or whatever it is. But it sits in your kitchen, so anything that sits in your kitchen should be cleaned off. But it's, if you don't just take a minute and like walk through and think, what do I need to clean? Now, things that are not exposed to heat do not need kashering, they just need cleaning. So a phone cord, a tape recorder that sits on the table, what's a tape recorder? A CD, you know, you just have to clean it with a cleaner, and then that would be fine. The handles or your knobs on your fridge, anything that's not used directly with heat just needs cleaning. Your cupboards, let's say you want a cabinet that you want to put Pesach stuff in, you don't need boiling water, you just need a cleaner. You just need to clean it off, you just need to clean it, just like the handles and the knobs and any other area. Now, what about your fridge or your freezer? So usually there's no heat used in a fridge or a freezer, so it's sufficient to just clean it well. Now, if you do, let's say after the Seder, your chicken soup is hot and you want to go to bed and you don't want to leave it out, so you want to put a hot pot in your fridge, so then you should put a napkin underneath or put something on that shelf that you'd put a pot that has heat. Because with heat, heat causes things to transfer. It can get an absorption. So, but unless you're putting a hot pot in your fridge, you don't have to line your fridge. Now, if you do line your fridge, again, that's a beautiful thing to do. It's a little easier sometimes just to line it than to try to clean out all the, but if you do line it, just be careful that the airflow isn't blocked, because then sometimes the food will go bad if the people have trouble with that if they line the fridge. One other thing that sometimes is could be a quicker way to go, and that is sometimes, like in the fridge, there's it's called a gasket. It's like a plastic, I don't know what you call it, the plastic seal on the fridge. So a lot of times crumbs fall in there, and it's really time consuming to try to get all of those crumbs out. So one thing you could do is you could nuke them. You know, get a really good spray, 409, and squirt in there, so that if there is anything that was food, it's no longer food. It's been hit with chemicals. Your dog would need it now that it has 409 on the crumbs. And so then it would be sufficient for the stuff that's like deep in the cracks, that if you really want to be thorough, again, it would be wonderful to get that out of there. It's no better time than now, but you've got so many other things to do that if you just want to give it a quick squirt, just so that there's no edible chametz in there at the time, then that would be a quick way to get at that stuff that's in the fridge or the freezer. So the fridge, the freezer, and knobs and other things, they just need a cleaning. Then we have, let's start with the self-cleaning oven. Self-cleaning is self-kashering. Don't have to do anything. You self-clean the oven, you're good to go. What if your oven is not self-cleaning? So then you have to clean it. In other words, even though we're going to burn it out, but burning out, if there's grease or something that's in there, it could still be there after it's cooked. A self-cleaning oven, what it does, it gets so hot that it incinerates anything dirty. So you actually don't have to clean your self-cleaning oven before you self-clean. Even if there's dirt in it, that's like the black ashes that's there afterwards. And that's fine. You don't even have to worry. I mean, you may want to clean out the black edge, but it's not chametz, even though it was at one time chametz. But if it's not self-cleaning, let's say it's continuous clean, so then you have to clean it. Now, the difficult thing is sometimes there's two things that need cleaning. There's cleaning that'll come off, and then there's cleaning that no matter what you do, it won't come off, because over the years, it's kind of discolored the metal. It's like cooked on to such an extent that it won't come off. So the rule is, if it'll come off, it needs to come off. If it won't come off, then don't worry about it. So typically what you do is you apply a cleaner and you try at least twice to scrub. And if it doesn't come off, then the metal is oxidated, don't worry about it. If it's coming off, then you clean until it comes off. The reason why people dread the job is there's a lot of nooks and crannies in the ovens that are hard, you know, just little corners and things. And on some ovens, you can't even use the heavy cleaners because it'll hurt the element. In other words, on some ovens, you have to, it says don't use the easy off, or the, so that's the challenge. But once it's clean, then the oven is good to go. This year, we actually put it in our newsletter. There's an interesting thing. In a self-cleaning oven, some people have a self-cleaning oven where the entire oven gets at a very hot temperature that cleans the entire inside of the oven. And it works so well that they were noticed that occasionally it would crack the glass on the outside. So some ovens have a guard that comes down and makes sure that your glass doesn't get self-cleaned. So the only problem is if your glass on your self-cleaned oven didn't get self-cleaned, so you've got to clean it yourself. Meaning that you have to clean the glass, or what some people would do is they just put a piece of foil over it. Or they would just make sure, like when the door is open, not to put a pot or a pan directly down on the glass, because that part of the glass didn't go through the clean cycle. Because if your oven, you can tell if your oven, when it has itself clean, there's like a guard that comes down and you can't see what's going on. The reason that does it is so the heat doesn't hit the glass door. So if you have that model, so then it would be best to put a piece of tape over the glass, or not put a pot directly on it. If you don't have that model, then there's a good chance that piece of glass got cleaned well. Yes?
So therefore, it's not like if you have a self-cleaning oven, you don't have to clean the oven door before you run it through the self-cleaning.
If it doesn't have that guard.
It doesn't have that guard.
Yeah, that's fine.
What about the gasket around that? That you're going to think gets cleaned also?
So, yes.
The inside gasket.
So there are some ovens where there's like this area in between where you can't get to. I don't think you have to worry about that, typically. If there's stuff dripping out, I guess you'd have to keep on, you know, wait until it's done. Sometimes after the self-cleaning, it like all comes out during the cleaning process, and that's fine. But whatever doesn't come out of self-cleaning is fine. Yes.
I'm a heavy iron skillet person. If I put my iron skillet in my self-cleaning oven, can I use the skillet?
Will it get ruined?
No, I've done it.
Oh.
But I didn't know how to use it to pass over.
Same thing with like the grates of the stove pack.
Yes. So, I would think that's okay. That should be fine. As long as it doesn't get ruined, like, you know, the self-cleaning, certain kinds of things you can put in there, certain things. So, we're going to talk about the stovetop in a minute. So, the stovetop on a gas stove, they have these metal tripods, and you have to clean the tripod. One easy way of koshering is just throwing them in the oven. So the problem is that they have a nice shine on some of them, and if you put it in a self-cleaning oven, it'll take away the shine. So if there's no shine, don't worry about it, just put it in the oven. But if you have a shine, so you may want to use a different method. But usually that's the easiest way to do your tripods, or you just take them off and put them in the oven when you turn on the oven. But it's good to have known that, you know, whether they'll get ruined or not when you put them in the oven. They won't get ruined, they lose some of the shine, they get duller in the oven. That's your basic rule of the oven. Sometimes people store stuff on top of their oven or on top of their fridge, and those areas should be covered typically, because you don't really kosher them, but sometimes you could put something hot, like you slip a pan, or so if you have an area like that, it's good to cover it, a piece of foil or something, or yes.
Regular oven
radio
newsletter, are you supposed to put it on the non-self-cleaning? The highest
setting for 40 minutes.
And if we have the top is the oven, the bottom is the broiler has like high, low, something or other. I'm not going to use the broiler and stuff, but so you still just go with the highest of the oven then, or do you have to do the broil setting?
The highest of the oven would be fine. Mm-hmm. Now the broiler, actually, koshering the broiler tray, it would not. You really can't kosher it without turning it red, and it typically won't get red. So you really can't kosher a broiler tray for Pesach. In other words, if you have like that tray on the bottom that you broil stuff, that shouldn't be used for Pesach. Now you can get a special Pesach broiler tray, but the broiler tray itself would be very difficult to kosher for Pesach. You'd have to get it red hot, and it usually doesn't get red hot, and so we just clean it and put that away for Pesach. Yeah.
If I normally have one shot in my refrigerator that I use the things, mostly, you know, on Erev Shabbos that are sort of hot, mm-hmm. should I then cover that? You know, I know I've put hot things on it before. Like, not, I won't put hot on pizza, but should I be, if I don't cover all my shells, should I at least cover that? Does it make a difference?
Only if you're putting hot stuff in on Pesach. And even then, you could do it right before. You could just put like a cloth napkin down and then put it on, if that'll work. Yes?
Only reds. Mm-hmm. unraveling while the self-feeding cycle.
Okay.
You put it back in afterwards and put it on 40 minutes.
Yes, that's what I was just going to suggest. The oven racks, the self-cleaning cycle really nukes it. It's like 800-900 degrees, and so certain things, sometimes the oven racks will get a little warped or whatever. So you could just take the oven racks out during the self-cleaning cycle if your manufacturer doesn't recommend that, and just put them in afterwards on high for 40 minutes, and that would be fine for the oven rack, assuming they're clean. Sometimes there's like grease on the oven. So if you have a self-cleaning oven, so then the heat gets rid of the grease. If you don't have a self-cleaning, there are chemicals that you can use to make it cleaner. Yeah.
So the knobs of the oven and the knobs of the stove, they don't have to be covered?
They should just be cleaned.
They should just be cleaned. Do you need to pour hot boiling water on the knobs? Just soap and water and scrub?
Just clean.
Okay.
Okay. Anyone could do more.
But too.
Same thing. Anyone could do more, but they just need to be clean. The truth is, even the light switch when you walk in the kitchen, you know, like you could pour the boiling water. I wouldn't pour the boiling water, but at least clean, like, you know, just wipe it down. Yes.
Don't say that anyone can do more. You don't need to.
Oh, you missed my introduction. Okay. Okay, that's right. Okay, there is a rule in Hebrew that kol hamosif garei. Anybody that does more, you're taking away, because you're taking away your joy from the holiday. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If you have like your timer and your temperature control mechanism above the oven, and it does get hot, you know, because the steam comes from the oven, does that still have to be covered?
If you have the timer or your control mechanism above the oven, you're talking about the knobs?
Yeah.
It just needs to be cleaned.
Okay.
That's fine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about like fountain to turn the water on and sink?
Okay, yeah, we'll get to the sink in a minute. Okay.
Uh-huh.
We'll get to the sink in a minute. Okay, we'll try to. Yes.
Faucet, thank you.
Faucet, yeah. If I don't, then don't let me leave without talking about the faucet. Okay. Mm-hmm.
The electric stove, it has the metal element.
Oh, okay. Okay, so let's talk about the stove now, if that's okay. So we talked about a gas stove that you have to kosher the tripod, the metal, and the easiest way is to throw it in the oven when you clean the oven. Sometimes it's not practical because you'll take away the coloring on it, or you don't want to put it in the oven. So there are other ways to kosher the tripod. One way is just to turn on the gas and let the fire go on it for 5 minutes. But the problem is that, especially now, they make these really long tripods that extend beyond the length of the flame. And so if you put the fire on it, the fire only hits about half of it. It won't hit the other half. So what you can do is you can flip it over or move it over, and the fire will then hit the other part of it. Or you can do it in two or three stages for 5 minutes each, so that the fire hits within an inch of each part of the tripod. And in 15 minutes, you've kashered all of your stove tripods. Do they have another name than a tripod? I don't know what's it called. Grates. The grates. Stove grates. Thank you. That's what I was looking for.
And on the side of the grate that goes along the side, the perimeter, would you cover that? If you don't put it in the oven,
right? So
then you have to would you cover that with foil? Or because you can't keep on moving like...
So you could try to move it. There is a third way, which is to take a block, like a piece of sheet metal, put it down over, even if it's black, if it was clean, and then turn on the flame, and what that'll do is that'll spread the flame along, and that'll also make it hot enough, 15 minutes. There's also a way to make a foil tent, and men like to do this. You take the foil and put it over and make it bigger. But it's very dangerous, because the foil is very, but it's very easy, because all you got to do is take heavy duty foil and pull it over, and you put all the flames on high for 5 minutes, and it keeps the flame down in there. The reason you have to be extremely careful, it's not good to do koshering at the end of all the cleaning because you're so tired and so exhausted. People hurt themselves sometimes, so it's sometimes better to put it in the oven or something than that, but that is the way to do it as well. The goal is to get what's called libun kal, which is, the word libun is a making something red hot. But you don't, for certain things, they don't have to be red hot. It's, we can use the light, the lighter red hot, which is what we use on the stove which that's called limon kal, just to get it pretty hot. But the problem is that today's grates extend beyond the flame, and so you need to find a way to get the entire grate cooked. Now, the rest of the stove, you really don't need to do anything to, as long as food doesn't fall onto the rest of the stove, or you don't put the lid of a pot or a utensil doesn't fall on that area. But we know over 8 days you're going to drop a spoon or a serving spoon or a fork. So there are a number of things we do to be a safety net. But you should know if you don't really cover it, it's really all right. You've done what you need to cook. But if the food falls on the rest of it and it hasn't been koshered, it's not so good. But you've really koshered the stove. You can use that stove right now. So what we do is we change. They use those disposable things that go underneath on the gas. Or people cover with foil the area in between. So this way, if you drop a pan lid or you drop a utensil, you've got that safety net. It's a much cleaner way to go. Now, the biggest challenge is the flat tops. If you have a flat electric of a stovetop. So you kosher, in that case, there is no grate. So the way to kosher it is the same as you would kosher any electric oven. You turn it on high until it gets red hot. As soon as it's red hot, it's kosher. It takes 3-4 minutes. Each burner you turn on until it gets red hot, and that burner and maybe an inch around it are kosher for Pesach. The problem is that there's always that one burner that's tiny, and someone puts the big wide pot on that skinny burner, and you made a mistake because the only part that's kosher is the little round area and maybe an inch more, and you put a pot that's too big on there. Or a pot gets pushed over, and so those are very dangerous. So on a regular stove, it's not so dangerous because the pot usually just stays on the grate. And even if you can cover with foil the area in the middle. So you might say, well, why don't we just cover with foil the glass top? So I have a glass top and I do cover it with foil, but there are people that have said they've scratched their glass tops by covering with foil. And so different people find different solutions for the, but basically your stove itself, once it's turned red, you can cook on those areas. The only problem is if a pan or a lid or something falls in between, you don't have any safety net on those flat tops. So, but it's not a major problem. It's just something to be careful with. And like I said, many people do cover it. And they, in the Pesach books, different people have different advice. In Borough Park in Brooklyn, if you go to the Ace Hardware, they have a cutout that you can just put down on it, and it's fireproof, and you got nothing to worry about. They know what you need right away. Here, I don't know the name of the substance that you put in to cover it with. It's not foil that won't ruin it. You can experiment. Foil won't necessarily ruin it if it's not too tight. But again, that's just a safety net. As long as you're cooking on the burner and not putting hot food or hot pans directly on the middle, then that's fine. Yes?
I don't know if you'll get to this.
Okay.
But if you have a microwave that's on top of a stovetop, mm-hmm. So there's a vent underneath the microwave mm-hmm. that I certainly use during cooking mm-hmm. a lot. How does that vent part? What if that vent has to be cleaned? How do I clean that vent?
Any kind of vent, or sometimes people have like a filter or basically any kind of cleaning solution and water is fine. In other words, as long as you cleaned it with a 409 or with a spray cleaner, that's fine. The concern would be that sometimes food could hit it and then drip down, but if you've cleaned it, just a thorough cleaning is fine.
So my gas stove has little covers on the gas where the gas comes out.
Mm-hmm.
The gas comes in. And I'm pretty sure from last year they are removable, those little circles. Should I stick that in the oven to be kosher, or should I just cover it with foil?
I put them in the oven.
Either way.
The circles, I put them in the oven with the grates. Mm-hmm. I threw them all right there. They're not shiny anymore.
My stovetop has the grates physically cover the entire stovetop.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like two large pieces. One covers two,
mm-hmm.
and then the other covers two. So if I stick all that in the oven,
mm-hmm.
the under part, which is made of, metal or mm-hmm. whatever it's made of, food sometimes falls down onto there, but mm-hmm. I would have to take the grates off to get the food back,
mm-hmm.
and a pot can never fall in there because there's no empty mm-hmm. space. Do I need to cover that with foil?
Not really. You don't. I'll be very honest with you. The year round, the area in between the pots is really non-kosher, because unless you're a vegetarian. Because when you cook dairy in the morning, you make an omelet, so there's a little bit of splatter, and that's going to splatter in the middle and around and underneath. And then in the supper time, when you cook fleishik, that also is going to splatter, and so that area actually turns non-kosher. So it means it's never a good idea to eat hot food that fell, you know, under there, or if a lid. We clean it well, and again, if it's covered, in certain cases, if something happens, you have a safety net. But if it's hard to imagine something happening that would be, like the food would fall in there and you'd still want to eat it, you know, if that's very remote, then I wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't worry about covering it.
If the food falls in there, just clean it out.
Just clean it out and you're fine. That's right. Yeah.
Just a follow up to get these questions, because I also have that vent.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I've covered it. Am I understanding that we don't need to cover it after?
If you can clean it well, you don't need to cover it. Sometimes we cover things that are hard to clean well, or it's like there's like a bunch of little areas. Like we recommend a shelf. So if you have like wire shelves. So if they crisscross, I recommend just covering it, because it's really hard to get inside all those little. Now you could sit there if you have all the time in the world, you know, and try to clean up, but it's just easier. Whereas if you have a flat shelf, you can just wipe it down. So the same thing is true with this vent or this area. If it's an area that you can just clean well and feel that you've used a chemical on it, so that either there's nothing there or whatever is there has been neutralized, then that's fine. But if there's areas that you can't reach, it's sometimes just easier to cover. Okay, yeah.
Just clarify. So if I'm putting grates and that little metal mm-hmm. piece that's on top of a gas stove inside of the oven to be self-cleaned, to be self-cleaned in the oven, then nothing else, and it's covered or cleaned completely, then there's nothing about heating it up or putting the fire on and letting it burn anything out, right? Because anything you would have burnt out would have been done already in
correct.
The oven.
Correct, that's right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Some people will leave the black thing on, they'll put the fire on to get the but if you're putting it in the self clean, then you don't need that. That's right.
Well, the burner's on top. Well, I guess what you call in the circles. I left on my super. So if you just turn on
the flame, that'll also capture the circles.
So how long do you have to do
that
for then?
So 5 minutes.
Oh, that's all?
Yeah.
We used to do an hour.
No, it doesn't have to go that long. That's fine. Okay. So we talked. Yeah.
Timing is self cleaning. It's only like an hour, right? Cleaning oven, I mean, it goes on for like 4 hours.
Till there's no more smoke.
Till there's no more smoke.
Yeah, in other words, when it's smoking, it's cooking something.
Right.
But once it stops smoking, there's no more. And you can usually tell, usually when there's a lot of grease in it, it needs longer. And that's when the mess smells up the whole house. But if it's already, everything's burnt up, then you won't see the smoke, no more heavy smoke anyway, coming out.
How long do you cook between 3 hours or 6 hours? So would you recommend doing the...
Three, as long as it's usually the beginning.
I've never noticed smoke.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'd have it all the time. That, as long if it's if there's a smell that comes with it. In other words, when the stuff is burning, like it's cleaning, you can smell it, because sometimes even the oven cleaner.
Like I smell heat. Like I can tell that it's really hot.
Yeah, the 3 hours should be fine then if it's under normal circumstances. It's fine. Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify. So if you have a gas stove and you take the eyes, the grill part off, and you put the oven to catch it, even if you're not going to cover the place underneath, you should. Should still at least clean it very well, because you might have a kosher piece like spoon that you might mix with or something and drop it in there and you might have crumbs. And
correct, yeah, it should still be cleaned. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. You want to have Shiloh's and then, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll get there. You're right, we may not, but I hope I'm not taking too many questions. I see that there's certain things you can't explain unless somebody gets a chance to vocalize them. So we talked about the stove, we talked about the oven. Let's talk about countertops and sinks. So, countertops and sinks, if they're made from a material that can be kashered for Pesach, then you can kasher it. If they're not made of a material that can be kashered for Pesach, then you can't use them. How do I know if my material is kasherable? Well, stainless steel is always kasherable, according to everyone, if it's stainless, if your stove or your countertop is stainless. Granite is kasherable, according to everyone. A pure stone, the Torah says you can kasher. Earthenware, porcelain, which most sinks are made of, is not kasherable, and so you'd have to use like a sink insert. Now there's a whole bunch of new things which are they go from laminate, which is like artificial, to they have like things where they melt stone together, like silestone and other things, and there are different opinions on it. The Chicago Rabbinical Council on their website has a whole long list of different countertops, and the Star K has on their website, and I won't tell you which one is lenient and which one is strict. Just decide you like Baltimore, Chicago, and then whatever they say. So if you have a substance that can be koshered, so for the sink and the countertop, the way to kosher it is by pouring boiling water over it. And I'll talk about that in a second. If the countertop is something that can't be koshered, then it just needs to be covered. So if it can be kashered, so there's three things in all kashering. Number one, it should be clean. Number two, it shouldn't have been used for 24 hours. And then the method of kashering. So with the countertop, the method of kashering is by pouring boiling water or the sink. Now, just one hint, I talked about this before, is that some people like to throw the water, like they pour it, and they keep on pouring, the water keeps rolling all the way down. But the problem is that when the water starts rolling, it loses its heat very quickly, too, because if you pour water, sometimes even at the top of the sink, by the time it hits the bottom, it's like it loses the heat. So when you kosher, let's say a countertop or a sink, you pour and you move with the water as you're pouring. Rather than pouring and letting the water go rolling all the way down, you just pour a little bit and move along with the water as you pour. One hint for the sink. The sink, it's very, I wear glasses and my glasses fog up and I can't see what I'm doing. And so, it's very hard that, you know, you're pouring, sometimes you spill a lot of water. What you can do is you can put your hand on the metal of the sink and you can feel if the water hit it or not. You won't burn yourself usually. You'll just feel like the heat, and you can tell. Oh, I missed this side. It's just a good way, like you're pouring on, because you need to get all four sides in the bottom. The thing in the middle, the drain thing, that should be replaced because it has a whole bunch of little holes. Anything with a bunch of little holes can't be kashered for Pesach. The reason why is when you put water in, water doesn't go through every single little hole. It has to do with gravity or something. It doesn't pour through. So also, like, you know, those strainers for macaroni, you know, if you need to use that for Pesach macaroni, whatever. Anything with a bunch of little holes really shouldn't be kosher for Pesach. There is a way with a blowtorch, but it's just easier to have your own, or just not use it for 8 days. The dollar store has them too, those little things you put in the drain. Yes?
What about the opinion of using the steamer over the counters?
If it gets hot enough, in theory it would work, yeah. Right. There's different models and different things, but basically if you can get boiling water on your counters, that might be the way to go.
It's a lot easier with steam.
Is it? I've heard about it, but I different models and things. Yeah. Steam alone, steam alone won't kosher, but if the steam turns to water, then it's fine.
It does.
Yeah. Yes.
What about like a wood, like a butcher block countertop?
Wood can be kashered as long as it doesn't have a bunch of nicks. If it has a bunch of nicks, you can sand them out. But once the wood is smooth, it can be kashered. Yes.
Yeah, and you kasher it the same way as for any other structure?
Yes.
What was that?
You kasher it the same way. If you have like a flat wood tower, you can just pour boiling water over it. Yeah.
The sink could be used for and then 24 hours if it's cold, you know, if you're washing.
Yeah, it can be used for cold.
I mean,
that's right.
As long as it's not hot.
That's right. And as long as it's not used with chametz. So, like, if you just need to wash your hands in the sink, even with hot, that would be fine.
It's not hot.
Yeah. So now somebody's asking about the knobs. I'm not supposed to leave until I talk about the knob. So, it seems like the faucet. Yeah, I'm sorry. The faucet. So, technically, I don't know why everybody pours the boiling water over the faucet. As long as the food...
The steam back from the food, sometimes you're pulling out a boiling pot of eggs.
I didn't mean the... I mean the handles, the...
Yeah, to turn the water on and off.
To turn the water on and off. There, I don't know if you have to hit it with water, but the... there's two problems in the sink. One is some people have this this plastic squirter that goes in the dishes.
Yeah.
So we don't really kosher plastic, but even if it's metal, it could be inside a pot, you know, with hot food, and so that would need a real koshering. That would need to go into a pot of boiling water. Or if it's plastic, you could just tape it up or not use it for Pesach.
Really?
Yeah. Or just make sure not to put it in a pot. Just use it for cold water, for squirting.
Could you put it in the sink while you're pouring the hot water? The zest kasher will not first be boiled.
While you pour, you could pour the boiling water on it. That'd be fine. So that's one problem. And the problem with a faucet is that sometimes when you have a pot and you're filling it with water, or you're the top of the sink goes into the pot as it's steaming up, and so then you would want to kasher the nozzle for the sink, the faucet. So how would you kasher? You can pour boiling water over the nozzle, or when you bring the pot of water, you just dip the top of the sink into the pot. Okay. And that's an easy way to kasher the top of the sink.
And then I don't have to use tinfoil.
And then you don't have to use tinfoil, that's right.
Okay.
So that's as far as the sink.
Yes. I use basil a lot on my salads.
We hope to get the products. Basically, what because we're running out of time and I want to answer every question, but ground spices should have an OUP on them because the places where they blend ground spices, they don't clean the blades in between. And Pesach, Rabbi Pimpas could tell you, right? You said the Georgia spice or the...
Oh, the spice company?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is it only clean when they have to do a kashrim or there's an allergen? If it's not one of those two, they very easily go between, let's say, cumin and paprika or something of that nature, just air blowing it out.
Yeah, and see, year-round, if there's a crumb of something else, it's nullified. But for Pesach, even a little crumb, we're careful with. So any ground spice should have an OUP on it. Whole spices don't need an OUP. You can buy any whole spice, like what was the one you
said? Basil.
It's basil is pieces, isn't it? Or is it ground?
It's basil.
Leaves, yeah. So that'd be fine.
They destroy.
That'd be fine.
They cut it up.
Yeah, that'd be fine. That'd be fine. One of the...
You can buy it cut up already.
As long as it's anything that's not in the category of legumes would be fine.
But you would have to buy it as the leaf, fresh.
And then you could buy it in the spice jar where it's pieces.
If it has an OUP or even without
an OUP, as long as it's not ground.
Ground.
Oh, is it always ground?
No, it's ground.
Like peppers, like when you buy peppers.
Ground peppers?
Yeah. You can buy whole peppers like that. You can even get the one that has the grinder at the bottom, so you can just, you know, make your own fresh grinded peppers.
That does not,
you know, it doesn't need any extra.
And that can't be used on Shabbos, right? You can't grind stuff.
No, that's correct. That's right. So there are a number of green things that aren't ground that come in pieces in the spice jar that you could buy as is for Pesach.
Oh.
But I don't know if basil is ground or not. You'd have to check.
It's not ground. Well, some is, but, you know, the one I buy, it's cut up.
So flakes would be okay. Flakes would be all right. I understand that.
Like parsley, for example, is also okay, as long as it's not ground itself. Even if it's a, because basil can either come in a whole dried leaf in a container, or it can come already broken up, so you just sprinkle it in. When it's sprinkled in, it's also done in facilities sometimes.
I'd have to look into that. I'm not familiar with it. I know that they recommend, they say ground needs a OUP and a whole spice. You have to find out if that's called whole. So I don't know
100%. Is there anyone that I could talk to about kashering my countertops? We have granite, but I've just been ruining my cupboards because I'm pouring too much water and just water is just soaking down and it's going into my cupboards and it's making a disaster. That I was told that I could maybe pour a kumkum, boil the water up, pour a little bit, and use the steamer along with it to make sure that it goes the whole width. You know, I'm using one cup of water to a steamer. Like, is there anyone that I could, if you said you don't really know about that, or do you, or?
If the steamer actually boils the water, then
it'll
be fine.
How do I know if it boils the water?
I guess you could see if the water is...
If I see in the container that the water is bubbling up?
Mm-hmm, that's fine.
Okay.
And it's steaming. The Hebrew term
is... How much water do you need to kosher?
Just a little bit. You can actually use something with a spout, and then only a little bit, like a water pourer, and then only a little bit of water would go at a time. There was a lot of times people pour with a pot, and there's a huge amount of water, but you can use like a thing with like a water pitcher with a...
I use my electric cuckoo in it. I just even feel like that's too much to get the amount of distance. Because am I using a thing to push the water? No, I have wherever the water falls right there. That's what it's.
You could do it in parts. You could pour a little, dry it, pour a little, dry it, something like that. You could have one person there with the towels while one person is kashering, the other one is following up with the towel and drying right away.
Okay.
A lot of people cover it for that reason because the countertops, too much water doesn't do well. Yes.
Do you know, like the sinks were just like?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay, so I have a sink that's porcelain, and then you mentioned an insert. Do you also need to cover it with contact paper? I've heard that you should put contact paper around the sink and have a bucket to put your dishes in.
The contact paper is just a safety net, meaning that if something were to fall in the sink. So there is a challenge on Pesach, and that is on year-round we can kosher things that become non-kosher. On Pesach, we really don't even kosher things that become chametzik. So like if you'd have, like if the whole thing would spill over and it wouldn't be covered, and then you could run into shallows, but it's not an absolute requirement now.
Like if you are going to be washing silverware, for instance, you put it in the bucket, and a spoon, not hot, but cold,
That's fine. You could just rinse it off. It would only be a problem if it didn't have soap on it, and then it was very hot water, and it hit the sink directly, and the sink was
broken. Like a big bucket in there, and you keep everything in the bucket, and
that's fine.
The ceramic part.
That's fine. Don't have to.
Mm-hmm. And then do you have to cover we're talking about the nozzle. If you're putting the boiling water on it, do you also need to cover other parts of it, or you just can rely on that boiling water?
Just can rely on the boiling water. That'd be fine. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Imagine like the drain and disposal area.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have to poison that or anything? How do I get that really clean?
The drain area. Past the drain, you don't have to worry about. In other words, when the water goes down, that would kosher. It should be run through for. In other words, in the disposal itself, there's a certain amount of food that gets in there, and so. If you would have the sink overflow, sometimes people have shilas when their sinks overflow. So it is a good idea to try to clean it out or run the water through if you can. Even so, if it overflows and the water isn't boiling hot and there's lots of soap in there, I imagine running it through with a soap cleaner or something for a few minutes would be fine. We're running out of time, which I'm sorry. I didn't get to the dishwashers and the microwaves. I'll leave that for Rabbi Feuerlach to see.
The water urn. That's an
Oh, the water urn. So, if you're lucky, you don't have to kosher it for Pesach. You can use the one year-round if there's no crumbs that come around it doesn't get washed with crumbs. You don't put your challahs on your water urn to keep warm. Then you'll have no problem. If it's around chametz, then it's a little bit complicated to kosher.
What if it's on a counter that you use all the time? But
so again, that's the wording that they use. If it really doesn't come in contact with chametz or other things that are chametzik, then it's not. You could use the year round one. If it's washed or it does, like I said, people want their challahs on it. They use noodle soups in it, and then the nozzle goes in. Or there, if it becomes. So you just kind of have to think how it's used. They have, for example, these newer hot pots that don't really have a nozzle. So if it's on a counter and it really stays far away from everything, but then on the other hand, if you don't, if it's likely that it's used around chametz, then people would either kosher it or get a special one for Pesach. It's a question for the person's rabbi, or it's a question for a person just to think about how they may have used it in the past. So just some quick tips on foods, if we can. Salt does not need a Pesach hashgacha as long as it's not iodized. Non-iodized, so any salt is fine. Sugar does not need a Pesach hashgacha. Any pure cane sugar, which the regular sugar is fine. Any non-decaf tea and non-flavored tea is fine. Decaf always needs the OUP, even coffee, or it needs to be one, because there's something in the decaf process where they use alcohol. But any regular tea, any regular tea bags, you're fine without an OUP. Any regular coffee, besides instant, and besides decaf, and besides flavored, is fine. That's an instant. In instant coffee, they use... they use maltodextrin, it's called. And so now there's plenty of brands that have the P on them, and there's some brands that are in the OU book that's online that even though they don't have the P, they're acceptable. There is something called real lemon juice, which is fine. Any orange juice concentrate is fine. We do an orange juice. Why does orange juice need a Pesach Hashgacha on the processed orange juice? The reason why is that in a dairy where they make orange juice, in most dairies they make orange juice, they do chocolate milk on the same line. In other words, they do all the milks that go through one cooker. The way they work it is they pasteurize it. In other words, when we fresh squeeze is always fine, by the way. You could buy fresh squeeze orange juice, grape juice, no problem. But if it's pasteurized, that means it's cooked. So they put the orange juice through the same cooker that they just cooked the chocolate milk. And the chocolate milk has malt in it, and malt is chametz. So it's better not to buy pasteurized orange juice. Tropicana, they've got their own pasteurizers, and that's why they're kosher with Pesach. We do the Kroger orange juice. It has an AKCP on the date code, and that's fine for Pesach as well. We do a run on the Kroger orange juice, and that's as far as that. Frozen fruits.
Why do you have eggs that you have to buy before Pesach?
So not only do we not eat chametz, we try not to benefit from chametz. And there's a custom based on the fact that in some places they feed the chickens chametz, and they feed the cows that they milk chametz. So there's a minhag, a custom to try to buy enough milk and eggs to last us through the chag. You could actually buy like after the first 2 days if it came from the few days earlier, because they actually by the time they ate it, it was. But if you buy, or you could buy the AKCP milk, which means it was from it was milked before Pesach. If you happen to have not bought enough milk or enough eggs and you just couldn't store them, you are allowed to buy them on Chol HaMoed. That's just a custom of Chapila. We try to buy enough ahead of time. Frozen fruits are fine, except if it has the ascorbic acid, which is used on some of the melons to keep them from turning colors. But all the frozen berries, the strawberries, and as long as it's just plain frozen fruit, it's fine. Frozen vegetables need to have a pea, because they make pasta and rice on the same equipment, and sometimes a little noodle or something gets stuck in the frozen vegetables, so that should have a pea. Okay, I've had kosher b'sameach. We'll take private questions. I don't want to hold up Rabbi Feinloch. And feel free to call us or email us at the office as well.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.